This is what happens. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. My computer decided that it needed to get an update right now, or my
sir.
So, I'm going to... Oh, hey, there's the agenda for now. Item number one. Should be called a meeting in order, but second, certification of compliance with the Wisconsin Open Meetings Law. We got that?
Yes, we are in compliance.
Feature program, nutrition education in schools.
Well,
and I'm going to say, I don't see them making
I know. Atifa was our presenter. I checked my email. I am not seeing anything, so maybe is it possible to skip ahead and then if she comes,
absolutely.
We'll do that then. So, hopefully in the interim, I will hear from her. I also brought my work phone in case she attempted to call and there hasn't been any calls yet. So
you might get enough time to do your presentation.
Right, because I'm Erica today in essence.
All right, YIG-YAR updates and coordination then.
Yes, that'd be me. And I think it'll be easier if I do it one at a time too, so there's no confusion as to which packet is what. I'll save it for update. So I am right now am taking care of all paperwork and as far as YIG outreach and YAR outreach, I will be doing that. And so I did update all the documents, so if everyone could take one, I wanted you to look at them first so that if you see anything, either during this meeting you can let me know or if you can send me an email, because ideally I'd like to have these go out January 3rd. I think that just gives schools more time to respond. I know last year we were a little more rushed, and so this year I'd like to make sure that we are sending everything in a timely manner. So the first page is the letter that just lets the recipients know about YIG and YAR. Thank you. And then after that is the complete packet. So the things changed here besides names and contact information and some dates. Then we have the, I'll call it informational sheet about the different committees and what youth and governance is. So not any changes on that. And then I updated the flyer. So we have when nominations are due, which are February 9th of 2024. The next page is the nomination form with the new due date of February 9th, 2024. And then there's general YAR information. And the contact information has been updated to include mine. And there, too, nominations are due on February 9th, 2024. So if we can get everything mailed on January 3rd, then that gives people over a month to respond, which would be nice. And then I will send follow-ups as well, saying,
and they'll start looking at it on February 7th.
Well, and especially because I'll send reminder emails, and you're right, and then I'll be like, because that's what I used to do when I was in a similar position with Cena. I'd be like, do you know you haven't nominated anybody from your school? And that usually gets a whole bunch in because no one wants to say, I didn't do any. Or I'll even do, you only nominated one person. I'm sure you have many more qualified people. So.
Well, and you know, everybody's got the fog of the break.
Right.
You send it out, but January 3rd, then it's usually a little slower to the draw.
Right. So. Yep. So I'll give you time to set up, Atifa. We jumped ahead to the next one.
Good. Take your time.
Yep. We're just doing this one first.
Can you say a comment that you updated it to your phone? Or are you anticipating being in the...
No, I can do that update now. Today, I made a verbal offer to a candidate who accepted. So barring any unforeseen things, such as like failing background check, which I don't see happening, but now HR will conduct background checks and that kind of thing. Anticipated start date is January 22nd. So for now, I'd rather get the information out because now even if we did this on the very first day that she'd start with us, then all of a sudden, I don't know. I just feel like, nope, let's just get the information out. And I just don't want the whole process delayed. I feel like, let's do it. It's a lot easier for me to forward information to her, and we can update the forms moving forward. You know, meaning like after, like the next round.
And so who knows, anything can happen
You're
in the next
right.
couple months. So.
Absolutely. So I'd rather just know that it's moving forward, and I will step in to
right.
do that. If
Agreed.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing with that one. The next one is the fact sheet. This is what youth receive. Hi, Aqua. How are you? Good. This is what the information that if a youth is nominated, this is what they receive. So again, it's the fact sheet. That's the first. Those are the first two pages. It's their actual application. Oh, that's right. Sorry, we got to go this direction as well. Sorry about that, Supervisor Kubicki. We do this one. And then the next one is the application itself with the new due date of March 8th. And then the recommendation form that the teacher or a youth serving, a person who works with youth in a youth serving organization, thank you, completes. So this is then again what the youth receive who have been nominated. And then finally, I'll let one go this way, we have the handbook. The handbook was updated last year, if you recall, and so has been reviewed by the county exec. All of you reviewed it, so it's about as updated as it can be, including changing the name of Jim Wallace in for golf director. I just did that today, since I saw the article. So that is updated. What I do want to point out for the booklet, though, is if you look at the table of contents, thank you, it's off right now because there's some appendices missing. They will be added once we have our new youth, because we take pictures and our new youth representatives would go in here, as well as the committees once you do your reorg after elections. So all of that will go in here. So right now, as you look at it, it's off a little, and that's the reason why. Appendix F, I would like to draw your attention to. It's the last page. Those are the dates for 24-25. So you'll see the board meeting. I hope I'm coinciding correctly with the correct date based on past years. It will be May 21st because of when the first falls. So it seems late, but it's when May 1st occurs. And that's when we will recognize outgoing youth representatives, and we will conduct an orientation, and the new incoming group will take their oath of office. We have June 26th for the bus tour. Friday, February 7th of 2025 would be nomination deadline for the 25-26, I can't believe I'm saying that group. March 7th, right? Oh my goodness. March 7th, so a month later, for application deadline. And then either the week of March 17th or 24th, we'd conduct interviews, and then that group would be recognized on May 20th. So wanted to draw your attention to that. As far as setting dates, we need to set some dates for interviews. We can either do that tonight, or we can wait till the January meeting. That is your call. If you'd rather look at your calendars, and in January, we could then set the dates for March, or we can do that tonight.
I'm okay with waiting for January.
Okay.
I would suggest that you have Daniel here to get some input.
Right.
All right.
I haven't thought much past December 31st yet. So.
I'm trying to get you to.
Okay.
Just a smidge.
I have.
Yes.
About the January 2nd.
All right.
Back to work.
All right. So then January, we'll set the interview dates, so that'll be great. Oh, if you see anything in the handbook that I missed, please let me know so that I get that updated as well for you. And then finally, for the Youth and Governance Report is attendance. Reviewing through November, so beginning December. When you read the handbook, it does say if a youth is under 50%, they will be removed. Not they may, a will. We have four youth under 50%. I think that, I don't know what Erica did in the past. I don't know how you feel. I would feel more comfortable if I were to reach out and at least send an email and say, hey, did you know you need to start attending these meetings or you will be removed versus you're at 50%, you're out. I don't know how you all feel. I feel, because part of it says if someone's missing, that their mentor should have been in contact with them. I don't know if that's happened. And that's the part that makes me question, we want to...
Seek first to understand.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'd like to do, Brian, with your permission, meaning the group's permission.
It's fine by me, too. Things happen in life, you don't know exactly why, but if it's just, if they can't make it, then I would be like, okay, well then let's give the opportunity to the alternates.
Sure.
Because we have two alternates, I think, right?
We have alternates, yes.
Yeah.
So, Yep. So we would move to them. But even with the alternates right now, technically, if we said, nope, that's it, hard and fast, 50%, we'd still have two openings.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think it's maybe best to seek some understanding, as Brian said.
Let's see what's going on and why.
Okay.
Maybe misinterpretation, maybe something, conflict, maybe a conflict that's insurmountable, and you move on.
Right. And it could be that. We find that out, and exactly. Then we add, we bring someone else aboard. Because then if it's less than 60% in February, that's when they're removed. We don't put an alternate on.
So. Right. Because then it really doesn't pay to put an alternate on in 2 months.
No, I agree. Okay, so I wanted to run that by you. So I'll send an email to them. As chair, like, I don't know, in the past, did the chair take care of it? Did Erica? Like, I will do it. Okay, I just didn't know as chair if you wanted to be CC'd on it, since your committee oversees extension. It's up to you if you want to have me CC on it or not.
Yeah, I think she just...
Okay, then I will do that. Okay.
I'm fine with that. If you have any insurmountable issues, then let us know.
Okay. All right.
It's letting the mentor know and whoever the person is and being like, hey, you know, it's been a while since we've seen you. Not sure what's going on. We want to give other people opportunity. If you're not going to be able to make it, let us know.
Sure. So. Yep. Okay. Sounds good. Any questions from you regarding Yuginyar?
Well, since I read them through thoroughly in the last...
All right. No, I mean overall. Right. But again, please send me an email if you notice that there's something that I missed.
Yes, we'll definitely take a look through that. One of the things I think you struck on it right away is that getting a good response. And I think that's sometimes a struggle. I know that last year, I think Erica had a fairly decent response, but she had a better response than previous years. So it was like trying to make sure that there's some follow-up on it, and if we're not seeing a lot of activity, is there any way that we can, I'm trying to think if there's any thing that the board members can do to help out. So I'm just letting us know kind of what the response is. I know you don't always get, you don't know that until the very end. But it's just trying to get the word out and encourage.
Last year, you had a deficit west of the I.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think anybody from Wilmot, and I don't know if anybody from Central or was pretty, maybe one or something like that. So.
Yep.
One nomination, maybe.
Right. So it's just trying to encourage, to me, Wilmot's in my district, so I would be like, hey, this is a good opportunity. Can you try to make sure that somebody is, you know, reaching out to administration or something like that? So I'm just saying, I'm willing to do that.
Okay.
So if you think that it would help, let me know. Mm-hmm. And trying to get the right people involved.
In past years, have all board members received, whether it be via email or via board packet, this information so that they could do outreach within their district or even nominate a youth? Or no? Because that's another thing I could do. I don't know if you would suggest email or if you just want me to send it to the board clerk and include it in one of the packets.
How are you going to do it? Like, to get to Central High School, are you just going to go directly to the people that you know there? Or?
No, we will send copies via snail mail and then email follow-ups.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you send an email and you include the supervisors for the districts, like, I don't know if that's possible.
Way.
Like, for the Central District, there's probably Brighton, part of Salem Lakes, Paddock Lake, so with John Poole, you, Mark Nordigan, Aaron.
Okay.
Just let them know that, hey, you're reaching out to the schools. Then it's like, oh yeah, that's right, that's going on right now. And and if they're, you know, it's just, it puts something in your brain to be like, hey, thinking about reaching out.
Sure.
That's my only suggestion on that.
Okay.
Because I don't always know how it's going.
Sure.
Until the end.
That's fair. Often we don't either. That's right. Why we're sending those last minute, like a week in advance, a couple days in advance. Hey, nominations close Friday. Yeah.
Right.
So we get a lot at the end usually.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Want to go back to nutrition then?
Sure. Let's do that. Nutrition education in schools.
Deepa, how are you doing?
Okay.
Good. Good, better now? Your ear set up? All right.
Thank you for the patience, I appreciate that.
No worries.
All right, for the youth and governance that are not familiar with me, my name is Atifa Robinson. I'm the UW-Madison FoodWise Administrator for Lake City and Ocean County. And then today I'm going to go over like nutrition education in our schools in our Kenosha area. And so I'm just gonna go do like a short overview, talk about more like our expectations and what our guidelines is for our program. And then I will go over like some numbers of in some of the schools that we are currently in, just to give you an overview. Okay. So starting off, UW-Madison Division of Extension, our Kenosha FoodWise team is an advocate for improving health and nutrition in the school systems. Our current SNAP Ed and FNET program receives funds from the USDA, and the USDA is working towards building school settings that teach students to select healthier school meals so students can be successful. So this is why nutrition education in the Kenosha is very important. We know that currently in the Kenosha Unified School District, some families face challenges with providing healthy meals to their students daily. So to ensure students do not go hungry, the Kenosha Unified School District in the 2023-2024 school year has offered free breakfast and lunch to all students who are enrolled. This was implemented so that all students would have access to food. Although this may be helpful for our families and students, we often notice that students have barriers with selecting healthy foods or still finding foods that they like to eat. So FoodWise has partnered with some schools in the school district to improve nutrition outcomes by following our program expectations and guidelines. And so our FoodWise expectations and guidelines is we're expected to provide nutrition education following like our SNAP Ed and FNET guidelines stated by the USDA. We're also expected those individuals who participate in our nutrition education should be providing information that promotes the five food groups. And then we also are expected to encourage individuals to stay active. And then we are also encouraged to provide nutritious recipes that are, you know, low in sodium, fat, and sugar, and high in nutrients. Okay, so with that being said, why is it important to teach nutrition education in school? Well, research shows that students who receive early education on health and nutrition will have the following: fewer absences and will attend school regularly. Good nutrition is known to help students show up ready to learn. And then student education also empowers children with the knowledge and skills to make healthy food and beverage choices throughout the day. All right, and so just to give you a highlight of some of the, you know, schools that we did partner with. So we worked with Absola, McKinley, Cesar Chavez, Vernon Elementary School, Ruther High School, Jefferson, Even Start program, and that's a we do children and adult under the Even Start program, and English and in Spanish under the Even Start program. And the reason why I wanted to talk to you about some of the schools, these are not all of our schools. These just is a small, short number. I'm thinking more like when I looked at the numbers, it's probably like 12 schools currently now. And so we want to increase our engagement, knowing all the things that we know right now. You know, we're looking at how to increase engagement in numbers of nutrition participants by school. And so the FoodWise team is working hard to increase engagement in the Kenosha Unified School District. According to CDC, schools can add messages about nutrition and healthy eating in the following areas to increase awareness and create increased participant by doing morning announcements, schools assemblies, materials can be sent home to parents and guardians, and staff, you can hold staff meetings like PTSO meetings to help to improve nutrition, and then parent and teacher group meetings around nutrition education. And as you can see at the top, some of our numbers currently for Absola, we have served in 2023 to now 137 students in Absola, for Vernon 108, and then McKinley 50, and then Cesar Chavez, 106. Again, those are just some of the numbers and some of the data just to give you an idea. To this date, I know for sure that we have served over 400 students within our Kenosha Unified School District. But we do understand there are some upcoming challenges and barriers that we will face in order to continue nutrition programming. So we'll talk about those right now. And so some of the challenges in implementing nutrition education in the school system is that you're aware of the right sizing that just occurred in the Kenosha Unified School District. Some of those schools that we implement nutrition education will be closing. You know, like Epsola, Furman, you know, Jefferson. Those are some of the schools that we actually work in. Like Epsola, we do dual language in that school. And we also recognize that not all of our existing partners, once they do their merger, will be eligible for our program in 2024. And this is because of the DPI school data or our requirements for SNEP Ed and FNEP. The other thing, the Food Wise program also recognized that not all families and schools have access to fresh fruits and vegetables year-round. So when we're implementing nutrition education, we have to be realistic to make sure it's accessible in their area. And then lastly, you know, FoodWise realized that the food cost has increased and that eating healthy can be expensive. I am one that, you know, prides myself on eating healthy, but if you total up the cost, I sometimes walk in the store and I might have five items and it's $90 for five healthy items just to keep my body healthy. So we want to be realistic of that when we're working with our, you know, partners and stuff in our school. All that to be said, there is a benefit to, you know, having nutrition education in the schools. And I feel like if we work together, we can have a healthier future for our students. And so one of the benefits is nutrition educators can work collectively with teachers and food programs to promote like healthy eating. Nutrition educators can provide resources such as 10 tips and farmer market upcoming events. And so some of the things I'd like to pass out when I'm doing resource tables is building a healthy meal, because some people don't know how to build a healthy meal. Eating food away from home, because we know when we're away from home, we like to snack and eat popcorn and candy and things like that, because it's not, you know, we're not in the area that we're familiar with. And then liven it up your meals with vegetables and fruits, just some fun and innovative ways to how you can jazz your food up, you know, with fruits and veggies. And then nutrition education, the other benefit is nutrition education be taught in English and Spanish with culturally appropriate recipes to serve all students. With the training that we have received at the state level, we can provide recipes for Hmong community, Hispanic community, African American community, and Albanian communities. And if there's not a community that we haven't, if someone comes up to us and they said they are a different nationality, we'll go back to the state office and they will help us with that. The other thing is nutrition educators can provide schools with reinforcement materials or products that will encourage healthy eating, like this fun water bottle that I want to purchase for our littles at ECE. You pull these off. These are fun little bands that they can put on their hands. And then, you know, it's in Spanish and then it's English. It says sleep 8 hours every night, move 60 minutes each day, eat healthy food for meals and snacks, and then, oh, baby, agua toda el día, to drink the water day, drink water all day. And so just things like that that we can give to our little ones to just do a reinforcement, or like the My Plate. So these things are through Fresh Baby, and I'm looking at purchasing those too for our reinforcements. So I said all of that to say what our program next steps are. And they're not gonna be easy. So our first step is gonna be the FoodWise team will reach out to the superintendent to discuss how school closing will impact nutrition education within the district. The FoodWise team will create brainstorming sessions to revise the teaching and staffing plan to reflect the new school merger and our new action plan in 2024. The FoodWise team will also continue to share any challenges and success stories that we have with the county board to keep you guys informed. And if schools are no longer eligible for the program, the FoodWise team will continue to provide indirect education. We don't want to just cut off our partners without any type of education. So we'll continue to provide indirect education through social media, quarterly recipes, and emails in English and Spanish for teachers, parents, and students. So that's all I have for you today. So what questions do you have about nutrition education in the school system?
Go ahead, Supervisor Breschow.
Latifah, go back to the prior.
Yes.
My question is, as the schools consolidate, why go a little bit deeper into why they would be disqualified from the program? Because you have need-based individuals that are translating into those schools.
Correct.
Do they qualify then for a different program, or are they simply disqualified because, hey, you're in a different building now?
So if they were like FNAP students and they were doing like Show Me Nutrition, there's a requirement where they have to 100% fit our requirements, where would they get free and reduced lunch. If there's NAP participants and they were doing something like Read for Health or Color Me Healthy, we look at this school as a whole to see if they fit like a 50% income limit requirement. So my students actually go to Harborside Academy. If they wouldn't have made that school currently a free and reduced lunch according to that program, my school was not eligible for nutrition education based on just the income of the students overall, at just even at a 50%. Because we have limited income that you can work with, and it's according to like the poverty levels, if you get like QUIC or, you know, food share, or you have DSNAP benefits.
Yeah, but you just said it's based on median within that school, mm-hmm. not based on thresholds that are established. I'll call it societal or a broader school.
Correct. So if they merge into a school that has families with higher income, if we look at the school as a whole, we could actually pull those students out, or families, the parents out one by one, but they don't want us to separate students one by one and say, well, you fit the income and you fit the income, because it gives, I'll say it the good way, you don't want to put a stigma on students that because they're limited income, this is the only reason why they can take this program. Because other kids can be cruel and they will pick on them. So we try to make it more inclusive and look at the overall arching to way so we can implement nutrition education.
Don't agree, but okay.
I understand. That's something that we do here across the board.
I think that's why she said it's a challenge. That means that you're not giving up on it. It means you're trying to find a way around it.
Correct.
I understand the reasoning why, and I agree with Supervisor Breschow. It's like, well, then the people that used to be able to get help are not getting the help now.
Correct. And so we always find a way to strategically. So, and thank you for being honest, because that feedback helps me to go back to the state team and I say, this is what I'm hearing. And then sometimes they'll say, well, according to guidance, we can't. But then they'll write it down and they'll take it up to USDA or NEPA.
There are always outliers to a program, but true need, just because you're in a different pool,
yeah,
doesn't go away.
We agree 100%. We do. Just know that we're working on that to improve that.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'll continue. I got four of them, but.
Okay.
You said English, Spanish, and Albanian.
Yes, Ness speaks Albanian. She has worked with Albanian moms in the past. We just recently found out through the right sizing that there is a Hmong community, but we don't have a Hmong educator. We would have to ask the state team for help. They do have Hmong educators.
The Hmongs are primarily northwestern or western part of the state.
Yeah.
Okay. Albanian just struck me as odd. So it's because of a pre-existing. She speaks it thus.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
You kind of answered my question on static or transient enrollment, because it's a selective program. So do kids matriculate in and out of the program? Do they is it static once you're in, or more fluid?
Most of the kids want, they continue to move up to the different programming depending on their grades. And so, like, if we work with the early education, we might see them again in second grade, and then see them again in fourth grade, and then see them in, you know, fifth grade, and then middle school, and then we might see them again in high school. You know, as long as they fit our requirement, you know, the goal is to continue that education up, so then as they do get older, they can eat healthy.
And I think to answer your question, Brian, and Atifa, correct me if I'm wrong, because they'll get an overall school, it's an entire second grade classroom. So it's not like anyone's being pulled, as we've said. And so they get it for that entire time for that curriculum. So they may get it again in fourth grade with a different curriculum, let's say.
Yeah. There was a separate part, and that is that all children are fed.
Right.
Breakfast or lunch.
Right.
So if it's a need-based selective program, need varies.
Oh, absolutely.
May need it right now, but next month Dad got a new job and everything for mom, and everything changes.
And so we're trying to help that even if a person is not eligible to be in our program, there's people have reached out to me. I still send them indirect information, like some of these tips and stuff, to make sure, or they'll reach out for questions, and I still send them information just so we're not just saying, okay, you don't fit our program. So, just so they still have that educational piece.
Okay. Thank you.
One of the things I noticed as a former teacher with students is often in the afternoon, after lunch, many of them get tired and sometimes fall asleep in class. And I remember... sometimes that's true. I remember telling some of my students when I was teaching, I said, you know, and I think it has to do a lot with what they eat, and that's why it's so important, you know, healthy foods are so important. I remember telling my students, I said, try it one day, just eat protein and vegetables for lunch, and see if you fall asleep in the afternoon. And I had kids try that, and I'm not that tired. Yeah, I said, because you didn't eat a bunch of carbs and, you know, sugar and, you know, swigging down Coke, whatever they're, I don't know, eating crap. And it's like, it's amazing. You know, attention span, sometimes we think it's a behavioral issue, and in fact, all it is has to do with nutrition. They're not eating the right foods, and consequently, they're tired early. I mean, if I ate a ton of sugar, a lot of carbs for lunch, I'd be falling asleep in the afternoon. Yeah. I can't eat that sort of stuff.
That was my problem, the honey bun and two.
That's what did it to you. That's what did it to you.
And I was going to say, that doesn't necessarily translate to your financial being, you know.
Right. I mean, those sorts of things are more expensive, and which is the point you were making. That's right. But the kids sometimes still, even if they have choices at lunch where they can eat certain things over others. And so, though they're healthy options, there's also, you know, there's pizza. And
my kids don't always choose the healthy option.
Yeah, well, most kids don't.
Right.
You know?
So, and that's, I think whether that's they're important. In the program or not, it's an issue.
Yeah, well, it's an issue across the board.
For you in general, I think.
Right. Like, one day, it would be nice if we can just do, like, a video for you guys with some of the kids, because I went into the classroom, and you'll be amazed what some of the kids say and what they eat for energy, and they really think they're gonna get energy out of like Takis and you know, and that's their breakfast. That's their breakfast, and then it's ramen noodles for maybe lunch, and then it's back to Takis and soda at night.
Man. I've seen those before. My
really
kids have had those before.
It
pains me to see it.
I think it kind of like a roll of jelly goes.
It's like a
roll of spices.
No, they got the blue boys though.
The kids know what they are.
Yeah, I know.
You got a lot of them.
But I have a lot of people I know.
Yeah.
Well, our youth and governance haven't said anything. What do you guys think?
What do you guys think about nutrition? I'm sure you guys eat vegetables and fruit every day.
I try to.
Do you?
Yeah. I want to get into the like habit of eating healthy, but it's hard sometimes.
What I say, take it in steps.
Yeah.
Don't do like overdo it, and don't just go cold turkey either. So just do it in steps. If you're a person that drinks coffee and you drink five, start with four next week and try it for some, like 6 weeks or something, and then wean down another 6 weeks, because you will go through withdrawal over your candy and your sugar and things like that. You just can't go cold turkey.
Make it sustainable.
Yeah.
Develop habits, right? Okay. Well, we encourage you in all your efforts that you're doing, and hopefully you can get over your challenges. If there's anything that we can help with, reach out and let us know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's not El Camino, for is it?
Must have had some sugar this afternoon. Okay. Thank you. Are we back to you, Pam, I think?
I think, well, we're done with as far as Yig and Yar updates, so how about our Extension Education Program updates?
Sounds good.
All right. Carolyn, do you want to start?
Sure.
Right here, am I right?
Yeah. 4-H is off to a very good start. Our enrollment is up 90 kids already since the end of last year. The problem that we face with that is 90 more kids, but not a whole lot more volunteers. So if you know any gentlemen that are inclined to volunteer for 4-H, let me know. But that is what we're doing now. I did some in-person training last month, and you can also do your trainings online. So we try to make it convenient for everyone, but we just got to get the word out and get them trained. But there's a lot of new families. I did a new family orientation, and it's good to see people are excited. Our most recent development is I have contacted Carthage College and Parkside to try to do some programming with them for theater and fine arts, and I did have three professors get back to me within a week, so that was encouraging, and they're looking forward to perhaps building a partnership there as well.
Okay.
Let's see, I'll give everyone a second to write.
Yeah. All right. No, I'll just jot some notes down.
Absolutely. Over in community development land over here, we've got our four corners. So right now, my first major thing that I'm working on is an economic indicator report for CAVA. So I've been in talks with Nicole, and when she was with Extension in Ozaukee County, she did one of those for their county. So now I'm looking into data and just seeing what we've got, what we're looking at, how it compares, especially pre-pandemic to post-pandemic. And just looking at all those big things, I am hoping to get a draft to her by the end of the month. So then after that, I will create a final draft of it early next year, and then I will be presenting to the CAVA board on that later in the year. Our next quarter is broadband, where I have been going to all those committee meetings again. And now in our last committee meeting, we've kind of narrowed down some places where I can really go and work and look to see if I can find any opportunities for funding or any other opportunities that we might find through Extension. I've been super busy with the economic indicators right now, so I haven't had a ton of time for broadband, but it's still there, and hopefully within January and February I'll be able to do a lot more of that as well.
We postponed this month's meeting, so you've got extra time.
That's true. Then in affordable housing is another kind of thing that we're working on. We had a meeting with some of the kind of big key players in affordable housing, and we did a little bit of a task force with Planning and Development, Extension, Sewer PAC, CAVA, and Habitat for Humanity, and Public Health. So we all met at the middle, I believe, of November, and we kind of started talking. Right now, I'm doing a lot of research on different affordable housing initiatives that have been happening across the state. And then I'm hopefully going to broaden that search to things across the country soon. And I believe we're going to meet again early next year and kind of start talking through all that data and things we found. Everybody had their own assignments. I wish I could remember every single assignment to tell you, but I got you my assignment. So hopefully within the next month or two, I'll have more updates on that. And then finally, with our entrepreneurship stuff as well, I am doing our homegrown program. It did get postponed till about April because our contact in Madison, who will pretty much help put it on, has another one that she's going to be doing her first one in January and February. So she really wants to get one of those under her belt so she can go and lead ours. We're also hoping to get a lot of those economic development people in one room, hopefully in January or February, as kind of a pre-meeting to our homegrown too, and getting everybody to truly meet each other and be in one room since there's been so much turnover in that department lately. So I know that was a lot. I'm kind of everywhere all at once, but that is what I've been up to.
So from the start of the beginning of the school years, re-engaged with both of the Head Start programs, with West OSHA and then also the one run through KUST. I primarily work with the caregivers. I know FoodWise does more with the kids as well as the caregivers, but the work that I do is with caregivers. So in November, I was able to present at the first parent engagement event that West OSHA Head Start did, for some pretty general financial management, budgeting, credit information, and then they're also going to have me attend their parent association meeting in January just to get a better feel from the parents of kind of what they feel their families need. And then with the KUSD Head Start, was able to offer two programs to caregivers, one regarding understanding stress and then the other with self-compassion, and then in addition still distributing the monthly newsletters for the Money Smart and Head Start series. And then coming up after, pretty soon after the new year, and I'll have April and Pam get this emailed out just because it has clickable links and everything. But if any of you know or work with people that are in more client-facing positions, whether it's at a church, a food pantry, social services, you know, case management, that type of thing, the program is designed for volunteers and professionals to be able to gain more skills and understanding to have financial conversations with the people that they work with. We found a lot of times those relationships are pretty well built and maybe there for that completely other reason of food or school or child support, etc. So being able to give those professionals good information that they can transfer to the clientele when they have inevitable conversations about money and finances and things like that, it works really well to be able to know that that is an established rapport that they have, as opposed to trying to then get groups to go to another person or another place for that information. But I'll send all the flyer and sign up information.
So the idea behind that would be to educate people that are in trusted positions with existing relationships instead of trying to establish new relationships.
Yes. Yep. Because sometimes if we
make sense.
Yeah, are just trying to gather a group of people for a class or a program, it always feels like it's a great idea, but we don't always get the people. Yet we know a lot of times there are other volunteers, professionals, just other people that are interfacing with kind of the end user. So this is a way to be able to give them great resources and information.
Knowing what tools are available in the toolbox, essentially.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people aren't aware of a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And we always stress to them, like, use this for yourself first, or, you know, it can be helpful if you can go back to clients and say, hey, I tried this out, I pulled my credit report, here's how, like, it's for everyone. So any way and anyone that we can get the information to is always a win.
Thank you. Sure, go ahead.
Two, actually. Carolyn, first, more of a statement than a question, but I noticed that a number of the kids are already working on the state fair. They had to do weigh-in on their cows and things
beef.
Already?
Yeah, beef has to weigh in. And so they have to start, you know, under a certain weight, and then they can only, I think, gain so much. They just keep track of it. Kind of like what I was explaining with the the pigs have to weigh in between a certain weight to be able to be sold. It's kind of the same with the beef. They just keep track of how they're
doing
that.
So it's a long-term commitment.
Yeah.
I took away from that. I mean, that's an intensive commitment.
Yeah. So beef is the one that starts the earliest. And then they also, like, check the age. They need to make sure the age of the animal. They check the teeth to see how old they are. And, yeah, it's a lot of rules and regs. Whereas the pig people, those piglets haven't even been born yet, you know, that they're going to be working with. But beef's our earliest animal project.
I'm not sure about that category, the pig people.
Right, yeah, I know. I love pig people.
It's almost bacon. And then, Savannah, I was curious. You said that economic indicator report you're preparing for CAVA. What's the crossover between extension and CAVA?
Yeah, so I've been working with CAVA since I got hired, and since they're our economic development organization for all of Kenosha, when they kind of transferred our position from just community development to more community economic development, they definitely brought them in. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm doing this for them, and then I will be educating them on the economic indicators of the area, and what they're really trying to do is make sure that they have best practice for data. So they really want to make sure that they have the most up-to-date data and have somebody who has resources for that data collection to do that. So they've done it in a lot of other counties. Like I said, in Ozaukee County, I've been using that one kind of as a template, but we also have people who are very big data people throughout all of Extension, so I'm using those data resources to make sure that they have that, and then with that data, they'll actually be giving it to individuals who they're already working with in CAVA who are already members and kind of working with them, but also using it to recruit other businesses to try and get them to come invest in Kenosha County.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think Atifa has some program updates too.
Okay.
So currently we are in Loser, and we're working with the high school students, so it's approximately about 15 students. The nutrition educators are finishing up McKinley Elementary School, which is going to be sad because that's one of our teachers, and they really love NAS. So they're working with, it's about 30 fifth grade students right now, and they have wrote her like testimonies and things like that. It's so cute. And then nutrition classes at Vernon Elementary, another, you know, school that will be closing. We're working with like 45 second graders and 32nd fourth graders on nutrition education. And then we continue to do nutrition education at Shalom Center in small groups with the residents there. There's talk with many schools to start education after the winter break, which is good. And that's generally about January, February, where we get going. And we're also working to reestablish partnership with Habitat for Humanity. I'm excited about that. That's going to be a great partnership. And then a couple of our colleagues are completing the system approach for healthy communities professional development opportunity. That's our PSE training. I took the cohort when it first started. So once everybody on our team is completely trained, then we'll be ready to move forward with some PSE efforts. And then Fabiola has been on the Kenosha County Food Bank Board since it has started, and that had led to us going out to the apple farm and doing the apple crunch. If you haven't seen our video on our Facebook page, you might want to go over there and say it's an amazing video. It talks about how do you pick an apple and how do you know like when an apple is ripe and how you take it off of the, you know, apple tree.
Okay. Pam, you next?
Yep. Well, I'll give a few notes from BJ, who is in India.
Okay.
He developed new policy guidelines for the Wisconsin Arborist Association's poster presentation, which will be in February of 2024. That's when their annual conference will be. He's currently organizing the landscape and ground maintenance short course. I'm sure you've heard him talk about that before. It happens every spring. So there he's gathered together the planning committee, and they've started those planning efforts. He developed a new partnership. It's with the Wisconsin Nursery and Landscape Association, and that's to host a joint webinar series in 2024 for tree nursery growers. The health advising program for 2023 is wrapped up. So finished. I'm sure he'll give you stats with that, and they'll be included in our annual report as we begin to put that information together. He taught his final session of the Teen Task Force Gardening Program. And finally, he attended Wisconsin Arborist Association's Fall Seminar and went for a professional development tour of Bill Radler's Rose Garden in Milwaukee. So that's what BJ's been up to this fall.
Before you jump off, there was an article in the paper, I believe, today's paper on Spongy Month.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'll have to take a look. Oh, I saw it.
Scrape them off the trees now if you see them getting
rid of them. Okay, yeah, I know.
Put them in a soapy bucket of water after you scrape them off.
Is this the time they're going to be on there?
The pods are in place now, so if you see like the dirty looking
pods, take care of
scrape those off so it kills them and then wash them. I'd like to go outside and look at my trees now.
Mm-hmm.
That's your
so they don't come out. They don't come out until May.
Yeah,
when it warms
up. But
out.
Now they're dormant. But mm-hmm. they're
it's time to kill the
space.
Especially
right.
this week because it's going to be nice all week.
Yeah, easy to inspect the trees and get rid of them. Absolutely.
Yeah, Aaron, get out there and inspect those trees.
Yeah,
I'll work in my yard.
Keep it in your area.
But yeah, I know that's a big deal out there. So those are on private property, so I'm sure they're concerned about them, but.
Sure. And then as far as my report, I've already shared with you the status of the Positive Youth Development Educator, Ag Educator. I'm in the process of making reference calls, so there's promise there too, and that's all I can say right now. So definitely I'll have an update for you in January, but fingers crossed that we will have an Ag Educator, which will now be called a Diversified Vegetable Educator. Diversified Vegetable Educator. But, well, it's a growing need as far as production, with vegetable production, whether it be to wholesalers or whether it be to farmers markets. And yet, the person will also be able to answer other, let's say, soil questions, pest questions as well, that kind of thing. But the thought was, instead of going big crops, regional position, let's hone it in a little so that the person isn't felt like they're being pulled like, oh, today I'm talking to a corn grower, tomorrow I'm talking to a dairy farmer, the next day I'm talking to someone who grows lettuce. So not saying that they're not going to have some other conversations, but it's diversified vegetable.
I've
educator.
Heard just the opposite from large production farmers. They're saying,
what's that?
Do we have an ag educator?
Oh, so we'll start with what we have and we'll see where we go from there. Yeah. Interesting. Good. At the state level, their program managers and the institute director. Because they did a little bit of restructuring of that.
Like that, want to work for him?
Well.
I'm being facetious now.
No, but I hear, well, we even had the word market in there at first. And we found that people tend to think it was a marketing position. And it's like, no, it's not. So you're still out doing, you know, ag education and ag-related work, not marketing work. So, or it's not the only thing you're going to do is farmers markets. It's not that either. So there were some people, I think, who thought that. And, well, I grow vegetables and I like growing vegetables, so I can be an ag educator. It's like, well, we need a little bit more than that. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yep, and so then next we'll be starting to put together information for our annual report that we can share with you. Next month we are going to do program highlights and 2024 plan of work. So you'll hear some of our highlights for the year as we celebrate all that awesome educators have done this year.
Positive Youth Educator Coordinator, which one was it?
Positive Youth Development Educator, PYD, yeah.
Okay, starting in January?
Yeah, as if all goes well, on the 22nd, Monday the 22nd.
Okay.
Won't be. That's
okay. All right. So that was the director's case.
Mm-hmm.
Brings us to the end of item 5 and 5 minutes before a public hearing. So good time.
Good break in there. Excellent. Thank you all and enjoy your
important thing to take care of is